Excuse me, your recording has started. You may now proceed.
Great, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the GNSO Next Generation RDSPP Working Group call on the 14th of June, 2016. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge today, please let yourself be known out.
Helen, it's 2 o'clock.
Thank you. And also like to remind all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Also keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'd like to turn the call to Chuck Gomes.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everyone for this call of the NextGen RDS PDP Working Group on Tuesday the 14th of June. Sorry about that. You can see the agenda in front of you. In a moment, I'll entertain any questions or comments on the agenda. But before I do that, does anyone have an SOI that has been updated? Now, was there, and while we're waiting for that, was there someone who said they're not in Adobe? I thought I heard someone, but wasn't sure.
Yep, that's myself, Stuart Clark.
Okay, Stuart, thanks. And Stuart, you know to speak up if you want to jump in, so feel free to do that. Okay, appreciate that. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands or hearing anyone.
Yes, Chuck, it's me, Klaus.
Who was that?
Klaus Stoll.
Oh, Klaus, okay. And you're not on Adobe either?
Yes, I'm on Adobe, and I raised my hand.
Oh, do you have an update to your SOI?
Exactly.
Go ahead, please, and communicate it.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to let you know that my updated my SOI on the ICANN webpage. I'm no longer the manager of the Global Knowledge Partnership Foundation. Also, I have no financial or contractual arrangements with ICANN. I would like to also, in the interest of complete transparency, let you know that I'm the sole member of the Progress Group registered in Limited LLC, registered in Germany and in Virginia. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Klaus. Is there anyone else? Okay. Not hearing anyone or seeing any more hands, we'll go on then. Any questions or comments on the agenda? Okay, then let's just jump right in to a brief update on tasks 7 and 9 of our work plan, which are community outreaches 1 and 2. Starting with outreach number 1, I believe there's been only one submission so far that came in some time ago. That was from the SSAC. Does anyone from any of the SOs, ACs, constituencies, stakeholder groups, or other groups have any questions about outreach number 1? And if you have a status on how your group's response is going, this would be a good time to share that. I can tell you that I believe the registry stakeholder group will have their input on time. Note that input on that first outreach is due the 16th of this month, which is Thursday. Even if your group doesn't have any very much input in terms of the questions that were asked, there's one question, if it hasn't already been answered, that we certainly would like every group to answer, and that's the name and contact information of a liaison or liaisons for your group. And if those of you who volunteered for outreach number 2 are able to do it on an ongoing basis, that's great. But please let us know in that regard. Okay. Lisa or Marika, do you have anything to add on outreach number one? Nothing from Marika. Okay, thank you very much. Let me put David on the spot and ask him if there's an update with regard to the NCSG and the two constituencies in the NCSG. David?
I can say that the Farrell has distributed the document to the NCSG, but we don't have any feedback as yet.
Okay,
thank you.
The
NCSG so NCSG, NCUC, and NPOC are all aware. And
good. Thanks,
thank
David. All right. Not seeing any other hands. Let's go on to the next agenda or the next part of the agenda item, which is outreach number two. Now, over the weekend. Yes.
I believe there is one hand.
Okay, I should scroll back up. Thank you very much. Javi.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Chubbles for the record. I just wanted to say in relation to this agenda item that currently a proposal for a reply to the outreach message is being considered by the GAC. We have set a deadline for tomorrow for written comments, and are currently monitoring possible comments. So hopefully we'll be in time for the deadline with a response from the GAC.
Thank you very much. That's very much appreciated. Glad to hear that. All right. Regarding outreach number two, as I started to say a little bit ago, a message was sent out to the people who volunteered to be liaisons for outreach number two over the weekend. If any of you that volunteered didn't receive that, please let us know. Hopefully all of you have already started out, and I've seen some of the messages that have gone out and appreciate what's happening with this outreach. And this is basically outreach number two is simply to see if any others in the community have any other suggested requirements that we may have missed in our list of requirements. And so thanks for facilitating that, and if there are any questions or comments on that, please bring them up now or on the list. And thanks, Alan, for responding to Marika's comment in the chat. All right. Again, that one will go until our meeting in Helsinki, and in both sessions in Helsinki, the cross-community session and the working group sessions, there will be opportunity given for additional requirements to be added. So, and the agendas will be designed to facilitate that along with other things. So, appreciate everyone's help on that. The next agenda item then is the planning for the Helsinki meetings, in particular the cross-community meeting, which will be later on Monday afternoon in Helsinki. And again, there will be remote participation for those who cannot be there in person. Hope you'll join remotely. Our task today is to refine our planning a little bit more on that meeting, and we have some slides that are still a work in progress that we're going to go through, and then we're going to focus on a couple of those slides in our session today and seek out some volunteers. So as the slides are coming up here, now I'm going to go through these slides really quickly. And And then we'll come back and focus on two in more detail, because some of the – keep in mind that this slide presentation is a first cut at slides we will use in the cross-community session in Helsinki, okay? So I'm going to give an overview of what we're going to present very quickly in Helsinki. Let's just do a quick overview of the slides right now. So if you could go to the next slide, please. And I'm going to move fairly quickly through the slides, so this group doesn't need them. So you can see the agenda. There are five items on the agenda. Go ahead and next slide, please. Not quite that fast. Go back to four, please. Okay, give people a chance. One more. Go forward. There we go. Okay, so the first agenda item, go ahead. This slide will be completed later, so before Helsinki. Go ahead. Agenda item two, then, go on to the next slide. And this is an important slide. Now, again, I don't need to go through the detail on this slide. This is a quick view of our work plan and where we are. So the items above where we are, we've finished, and where we are, and with a link to the slide. Notice it's showing phase one, which we will be in for a while. And let's go to the next slide. The near-term opportunities for early input. Again, most of you all know all this, so I don't think we need to take time to look at it, but this will be information provided to those in the session. Next slide, please. And then agenda item number three, go ahead. Here's where we're going to invite input from especially from visitors in the cross-community session, okay? The middle bullet, as you can see, provides a rationale for why this is important to people. And the last bullet's important. We really want anybody who's interested the opportunity to voice their concerns and input in this cross-community session. Go ahead to the next slide. And this one here, again, none of you need me to go through this. There's a very quick recap of all 11 questions. The five first questions are each have a box of their own, and then the cross-cutting questions covers the other 11 questions to give a very quick overview. Now, keep in mind before I go to the next slide that what we're trying to do in this session is make it mostly interactive. And so because there will be people there that aren't up to speed in our group, we're going to give them some background information, as you've seen on this slide and others. But we're going to cover that fairly quickly while still letting them ask questions and addressing their questions. Go ahead to the next slide. So, and we're going to come back to slide 12, so let's go to slide 14. Okay, so this is a really important part of the slide deck, because here we're going to actually give the visitors in the group an opportunity to make their own suggestions and comments. Go ahead and go to slide 15. And notice that 14 was just a repeat of the earlier slide. But we'll keep that up so that they know they can address this particular question. This is an input slide, and we as a leadership team are still working on how to do this. If we can enter suggestions from the audience live on the screen, we will do it. Otherwise, we will use flip charts and whatever means we can to record the suggestions of possible requirements from people in the audience. We'll, of course, also let them ask questions about various things in this process. Next slide. Okay. This one, and I believe, or at least this has been talked about, we're going to actually have red and green cards in the room so that we can do quick surveys of the audience in terms of whether they support something or don't support it. And in particular, even though we as a working group are not going to get to start trying to answer this question until we get through the first five questions and the requirements associated with those, we will give the audience a chance to just tell us where they're at very quickly on this. Next slide. Next slide. So agenda item four then. One more slide, please. Okay, so you can see the next steps here. And we'll talk about our working group meeting, which will occur the next day, and that it will be open to everyone, not just work group members or working group observers. And we will let everyone participate. Next slide, please. Go ahead, one more. We'll put links here so that people have things to follow. And then I think we can go back to slide 12, please. Now, the purpose of that was just to make sure all of us have the context of what we're talking about. And Marika pointed out to me that we may just use a show of hands, which will be fine for the agree and disagree, so that we can kind of keep people involved and see where the audience is standing. So thanks for Marika for pointing that out to me. And as Steve, you ask a really good question. It's not a vote, first of all. Let's be clear about that. We won't be taking votes. In fact, we probably won't be taking votes in the group. We may do some polls to take the Marika says, take the temperature of the room or of our working group later on, but they won't be votes. It's just there's a couple purposes for it, Steve. Number one, trying to keep people involved. Okay, get them to think and respond. And we'll qualify it to let them know this is not a vote. It's just, you know, where are people at in the room on this, and making it very clear that the working group itself won't even start to reach consensus on that big question until we have finished our deliberation on the first five, on the requirements associated with the first five questions. I hope that answers your meeting, and any polling we do in our working group meetings would be the same thing. So they won't be votes. They won't have any significance in terms of ultimate decisions of the working group. And David said it right there. And Scott brings up a very good point, and you might want to emphasize this to your groups in response to the second outreach message, the informal one. The requirements document right now is 110 pages long. That's going to be pretty intimidating. So if people want to just ask you as a liaison or anyone from one of the groups you're in, if a particular requirement has been covered, you can check for them or just have them do a quick skim of the requirements. If somebody wants to submit one and they don't have time to go through the 110-page documents, we're going to accept it. So let's make it as easy on people as possible. So, and as Lisa points out, we're gonna get to this a little bit further in these slides. So let's look at slide 12 here.
Chuck, it's Alan. Can I get in, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, Alan. Yes, you can. I've been so busy reading chat, I forgot you had your hand up. Go, Alan.
Oh, I put a message in the chat saying my hand was up.
I missed it.
Okay. A few slides ago when you had the red and the green, the question was, if I remember correctly, and it doesn't matter exactly, is a new generation RDS needed for your data? I really would like to make sure that we have some clarity. New generation RDS is essentially a buzzword. We've all seen examples in technology where everything under the hood has changed and the name stays the same, and other cases where virtually nothing changes but a new marketing name is added to it. So no new generation RDS is needed for anything. We can revamp the hell out of who is and change its internals completely and still call it who is if we chose. So let's make sure when we're asking questions like that, I think what we're really asking is, do we need a substantial, I'll use the term rewrite, that may not be the right word, a redesign of who is to be able to function in the world we're moving into, whether we call it who is Mark II or new generation RDS. So let's make sure when we ask the question, we're asking the right question and not just relying on buzzwords. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate that. And, of course, our charter gives us the questions to ask. Whether they're framed perfectly or not, I'm not sure. But one of the basic questions we have to ask is a redesign, whatever that means, needed, or could we modify the existing system? That's a question we will have to address at the end of the first part of phase one, which is the first five questions.
Yes, if I may have a follow-up. I understand
sure.
that is what is in the charter, and those of us who have spent a large part of our lives designing systems know that you can go about things in various different ways. And I think the question it's asking is, do we need a major redesign to do it properly, as opposed to, do we need a new name? And I just want to make sure when we ask people for clarity, that we ask people the right question, even if it's not exactly the right words in our charter. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And of course, we will be trusting all of you to make contributions in the cross-community sessions. We want you to be as brief as possible so that we can focus on getting input from the visitors that are there, but feel free if we don't adequately communicate that we will say it properly. So feel free to jump in if you're able to attend that session, so, and others as well. So lots of things in the chat. Kathy, go ahead.
Yeah, can I ask staff to set back the slide that we're looking at to the one with the vote on it, the one with the green and the red?
Sure.
Thanks, and I'll pause until we do that. Great. Okay, so I'm going to follow up, Chuck, with what Alan was saying, because I feel like we're in a game of the blind man and the elephant on these terms. And I don't think we're bound anymore by the words the charter gave us. I think it's our time now to define them, knowing that these words, next generation RDS, are vague and ambiguous, and depending on whether you're technical or policy or legal, you're going to be coming in with a different perspective and interpreting it differently. Is it a technical redesign? Is it a legal redesign? What do these terms mean? So I'm with Alan. I think it's time for us, when we're asking questions that we know in the working group raise issues that we've discussed for months, we don't pass on that ambiguity. that we start helping people understand the nuances. Or, you know, do we have to introduce weirds here a little bit and some of the new capabilities of the who is so that people understand what the additional capabilities are versus what the next generation might be if it's a spin-off of that or something completely new? We're dealing with a lot of stuff here, and if we just, again, if we just keep passing, you know, moving the ambiguity down the track, I'm not sure how useful the input is. I think it's our time to define these terms. Thanks.
Kathy, this is Chuck. You're absolutely right. It is our time, and we're a ways from doing that, but we're heading there. I want to call everybody's attention to the way this is worded here. This is not wording from the charter. It's wording that's focused on the audience. Is a next-generation RDS needed to support your GTLD registration data and directory service requirements? It doesn't say the community. It says you're, in other words, we're focusing the question on the audience and what they understand as their requirements. Now, the working group has a much broader task than that. This is just an interactive question for the visitor, directed at the visitors in the room, okay? But again, and let me point out, we're going to have 85 minutes in this session. We're booked for 90, but we have to get out of the room 5 minutes early so the next session can start. So we have 85 minutes, and we're not going to be able to go into depth with a lot of the issues and the nuances that all of us are very familiar with and that are very important. But it'd be really easy for us as a working group in this 85 minutes to monopolize the session and advocate for our points of view and do lots of things and even have our own debate. But if we do that, we'll leave the audience behind. And so we're trying to take advantage, especially in this cross-community session, to really emphasize audience participation. Now, hopefully out of this, we will get input that will help us in our working group session the next day and in the weeks ahead. But please keep that in mind on this. We're going to try really hard not to monopolize it with working group discussions, but rather to facilitate audience participation. So, Holly, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say perhaps it would be helpful if somewhere in the slide either to have the EWG report that actually starts to list the data or my favorite document, SAC054, that just has a list by the registration cycle that does list the sort of information that we're talking about that may help the audience. Just a suggestion, but that would answer Kathy and Alan's suggestion, or at least help in the understanding that what data we're talking about.
Thank you, Holly. This is Chuck. I have a concern about getting into that much detail on one area of questions that happen to be the data elements. Again, if we do it on that one and don't do it for any of the other four primary questions, we're going to run out of time way before we cover what's on the agenda. But if others think that's doable and still stay within our time frame, I obviously will support it. But my concern is we're not going to be able to get into too much detail without using our time up and not covering very much at all. And we're going to have to take fairly high brushstrokes, I think, in an 85-minute session and allowing plenty of time for interaction. And especially even getting into the specific documents, like you say, the expert working group and the ESSAC report that you referred to. Okay, let's go back to slide 12, please. And very quickly, What are the possible requirements? An exercise that we will hopefully be wrapping up, at least first iteration of that, in Helsinki. And then a couple questions there are, again, designed for discussion to engage the people in the room who are not working group members. Where does Who Is fall short today? What requirements should a new RDS policy satisfy? And we'll be capturing all these things and then able to use that information as we get into detailed deliberation. This is not a deliberation session, but we're trying to engage those who are visiting our session that are in the room or online. The second bullet there, we're looking for broad spectrum of real-life examples and want them to share their own views to inform our future deliberation, okay? This is not our deliberation time. It's a time to get input from those who are not a part of our working group. Third bullet, we're going to have working group members, just a few, share some examples, and the next slide will get into that a little bit more. Then we want to leave adequate time for different examples. So we're going to ask the volunteers that we're going to seek in just a minute to keep their examples to a minute, a very brief example of a requirement. To avoid repetition and distribute examples across our charter questions, especially the first five charter questions. So let's go to slide 13 then. And you can see that slide and this one will be not look the way they do now for the cross-community session. These two slides are really designed for our meeting today, to help us organize ourselves for that meeting. And so you'll see some examples here that are given, taken from our input documents, and I think Lisa's the one that did these, just as examples. So any deficiency in today's Who Is policies or implementation that you would like to see corrected. And of course, we're going to want the audience to respond, but here's an example. Who Is lacks mechanisms for access control, integrity, and confidentiality. So we would ask for a volunteer to share. It doesn't have to be this example, but these are examples. And notice this one was taken from RFC 3912 and relates to privacy and gated access both. So two of the questions. You can look at the other two examples yourself. One of them on data accuracy, one of them on users and purposes, one of them on data elements and from different sources. So these are just given as examples. And so what we'd like to do, as you saw in the last bullet on the previous slide, is get some volunteers. Maybe five volunteers will work, or it doesn't. Five's not a magic number, but pick out some good examples that cover the spectrum of the first five questions, and come from different sources. So, what I'd like to ask now is there anybody who would like to volunteer to be one of the working group members in the cross-community session to pick an example and share it? Now, just to let you know before you volunteer, so I don't put you on the spot after the fact, what we're going to ask you to do is to prepare your example requirement in advance of our working group meeting next week, and we'll go over those next week and allow feedback and interaction. So after our meeting next week, we'll pretty much know we will have a good idea of what examples will be shared and who will be sharing them in the working group session. Now, it's not absolutely essential, but it'd probably be helpful if it's people who can be there in person. So, any questions about what we're asking for with regard to volunteers? And I appreciate what's going on in the chat and Lisa's response to that. That's great. Holly, go ahead.
I was just going to say I'm looking at what Lisa said, and I think if what staff does is look at the suggestions that have been made in the chat as well as what is on slide 13, I think we're starting to really expand the notion of what that data is. So I'm sure somebody between Carlton, Kathy, and I will make sure, but I'm almost putting my hand up to say I would really like to be involved in what goes up on a slide, and it may just be for me to say the slide would be something like SAC 054. My only reticence on that is Jim Galvin is the one who wrote it and could probably better explain the data than I could. He's got a far more technical background than I. So if he hasn't got his hand up, then my hand is up. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Holly. And I'm just checking. I don't think Jim's on the call either. Oh, there it is. Okay. Oh, it had moved up. I had scrolled down, and he had raised his hand, so I totally missed it. Thanks, Jim. Go ahead.
Just raising my hand because Holly mentioned my name and you were looking for me. But sure, I'm happy to stand up in any way that if they're selected, I'm happy to speak for the items that are selected if we choose items from SACDoc. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. And Holly, I have a question for you. This is Chuck again. How will what you're suggesting facilitate the visitors that are in the room in sharing new possible requirements? Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I think my concern is that if you look at the RAA and the information that must be made public, it is not all of the information that's actually required, just the process of a domain name from the beginning to the end. And even just going through the life cycle, and the SAC 054 has a really nice kind of graph that says these are the stages, and at each stage, there is particular information that's required just to manage the process. And without going into a lot of technical detail, what that does is to say there's more information than just the traditional who is. This is how we as the technical community manage the detail and manage the domain name system. So it gives a much broader picture than just the traditional notion of what who is. Now, I would be very sort of careful not to go into a lot of detail, but having that sort of overview does highlight that there's a lot of information that is needed just to make the process work, and some of it is part of the traditional who is, but there's other information, and that's what's made clear in SAC 54. And, of course, as I said in the email this week, all of that information is covered elsewhere, but it's just brought together in that nice little table that's easy to understand and probably encompasses for people's minds how much data is required just to manage the process. I hope that answers your question.
I'm not sure it does, but let me pursue it a little bit further. This is Chuck again. So, Holly, what would you propose as an example requirement for the audience? Would you propose showing that table as an example of a requirement?
I would show something like a table. And, you know, somebody like Jim is there just to say, well, we need to manage this sort of information because some of it's technical and some of it is just personal information. Some of that information is personal information and sensitive. Some of that information isn't. And one of the big tasks for this group is to identify the sort of information that may be subject to a lot of requirements. So, yeah, the table is just, it's an easy way into understanding. There's a range of information that is required. And without going into a lot of detail, because a lot of the audience, is including myself, is not going to be aware of all of the technical requirements. And it's just a way into understanding, I suppose, the information requirements at every stage of the management of the domain name.
So would you be willing to volunteer to provide this possible requirement with regard to the data elements?
And draft as long as people like Scott and Jim don't laugh at me, yes.
Oh, laughing's healthy.
I'll call on them in the audience.
I know that neither one of those two guys would laugh at you, but that's good. Let me let Lisa jump in.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record, and just to clarify, before our Marrakesh meetings, some of you may have noticed it, some of you may have not, but we had, I think it was just three slides that were an automatically rolling display before our meeting started, one that showed the components of the WHOIS system, one that showed an example WHOIS record, I think it was conceptual, and then one that showed an actual WHOIS record filled in. And so what I had been suggesting in the chat was that we start with that and expand on it, maybe give some examples pulled right out of 054 to show additional data that some entities collect, because, of course, not everybody does collect the same additional data that's not published through WHOIS today. But some additional examples from SAC 054, and then, as Carl suggested, maybe just kind of highlight some of the elements there that are PII. But the concept was to have that rolling display occur before our session even started, so that everybody sitting waiting for the session to start would have that sort of mental picture of what it is that we're talking about, and not necessarily present that level of detail during the session. Now, that doesn't mean that maybe some people would not like to volunteer to present specific data elements as potential requirements. That would be, up to them and great to add to the conversation. But my suggestion really was in advance of the session rather than presenting those very detailed slides during the session.
Thank you, Lisa. So in reading, and Carlton, I want to respond to your comment because I'm getting the impression that we're mixing up our working group efforts in deliberation that are ahead of us and what's going to happen in this cross-community session. We're going to let the visitors cheat a little bit and get ahead of the game in some of the questions because we're not going to have an in-person session with them again for, 4 or 5 months. What I'm hearing you say, Carlton, is that we first address the policy question at the broad level before we go to asking what should be collected, validated. And then we're back to a discussion we had for quite a few days several months ago, and we as a working group have to do that, and we have to decide what we're going to do first, and we're going to be talking about that in agenda item, action item 11, okay? But we cannot expect the visitors in this room to deliberate at the same level that we are going to be able to do because we've been working on it for months, okay? And in 85 minutes, we can't bring them up to speed and ask them to deliberate in the same way we will. What we really want, I think, from this session is to hear from the community where they're at, so that we can respond to their questions in terms of where we're going and use their input as it fits as we get into our detailed deliberation. don't expect the cross-community session to be a working group meeting. It's not. If we make it a working group meeting, we're going to lose the audience. So, we're all learning in terms of how to do this new meeting format, but please don't think of this cross-community session, the session on Monday afternoon, as a working group meeting. We want the working group members there, but we're going to focus on the visitors that are there. And then the next day we will have a working group meeting, and that will be a working group meeting when we will be debating as working group members and maybe even doing some deliberating, okay, while at the same time allowing participation from the visitors. Crowdsourcing is kind of a good term, Greg, I think. So Lisa put a link to the face-to-face session that's in there. I'm just looking at what you wrote there, Steve. Hang on with me a second. Yeah, you're right, Steve, I think. So please understand what the purpose is here. And in fact, Thomas Schneider from the GAC sent something out to the SOs and ACs with some suggestions for what the cross-community session should be. And I thought it was pretty much on target on a lot of those things. And what we're trying to do is make this interactive with the community. If we try to get down into the weeds in this session, we're going to lose people, and we won't have enough time to give them the full background that they need. So I've got one volunteer so far, Holly, and she's going to develop one for data elements. Is there a volunteer for the other of the five first questions? And it can be a combined one, too. We have a volunteer for the purpose area, for users and purpose. How about for Jim? Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'll take a stab at making some suggestions for user and purpose and pulling it out of our list and seeing where we go with that.
Thanks, Jim.
Yay.
And the examples on the screen are just to show kind of what you have to produce, okay? A requirement, a reference if there is one, and then the connection to the question on the first five questions. Okay, so we've got two volunteers now. How about a volunteer for privacy and data protection. I know there's nobody in the group that cares about those areas.
Chuck, this is Kathy. I just volunteered for that in the chat room.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay, good. Okay, so we
I've never heard the topic in my life, but, you know, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, okay, good. Good. And keep in mind, this isn't going to be an opportunity to advocate, and I'm not saying this because Kathy just suggested that, but I want us all to remember this is going to be a time to show examples. And what we're going to then do is say, okay, what requirements do you and the audience think are important? Now, they'll duplicate some of the ones we had, and that's okay, but they may come up with some new ones too. So we've got what about gated access? Anybody that wants to give an example of gated access? Thanks, Carlson. I appreciate your willingness. Sorry you won't be there. And Michaela, I don't think, is on the call. He wasn't earlier, so we won't volunteer for him. Anybody for gated access? Now, we don't have to cover all five, but we would like whoever's doing it to be able to present to come up with yours, send it to the list before our meeting next week, and then go and then we'll discuss it and make sure everybody's clear on what's going to happen in the session in Helsinki. Okay. I'm just looking. And if we cover the big three, that's probably okay. I think you're right, Kathy. So, it looks like they're trying to volunteer you, Scott. Are you going to be in, Scott, are you going to be in Helsinki? I don't even know. He's not. So he got out of that one easy, didn't he? All right. Well, let's go with those three. If we get another volunteer, and let's have an action item to see if there's a volunteer for the other two areas. If there's not, covering the big three as examples, I think, is fine. So we're looking for volunteers on gated access and what's the one I'm missing right now? Of the first five, accuracy. Accuracy is the other one. Thank you, Lisa. Okay, I don't want to spend any more time on this. Three of you have action items for our call next week. Now, remember, our call next week is going to be at Holly's time.
Yay!
So it's not going to be a great time for some of the rest of you. And if for some reason you can't make that time, please get your input into us in advance of that meeting. Everybody should get their input in advance so we can do that. All right. Okay, this took quite a bit of time, but it is important we get ready for that meeting there. So I want to move us on to the next agenda item, which is the starting on task 11. We have a document that we've bounced around a little bit, not too much, on the leadership team in terms of answering the question in task 11 of our work plan, which is how are we going to reach consensus in deliberations? Now, first of all, and I guess we don't want this document, we're going to go through, the first thing we want to do is review what the charter says about the rules of engagement. Is it possible to post the section 4 of the charter? To just do a quick review, sorry for not saying that first, but that's the first action item on this little one-page-plus document that was up there. So Section 4 of the Charter talks about how we're going to determine consensus in the working group. It's pretty clear in terms of how we ultimately determine consensus in our final report, but we need to expand on that a little bit and see, okay, how are we going to apply that, or can we even apply that in our deliberations when we get into step 12? So hopefully the section, and I'm not going to read section 4 of the charter, all of you can do that, but it's pretty clear in terms of how we ultimately reach consensus, but we're going to have to do a lot of work before we get to that point. The charter's a bigger document, so I assume that's the problem here. Let me talk to it without it before it comes up on the screen if it doesn't come fairly quickly. Okay, here we go. So scroll down to Section 4 in the Charter, if it's up there. I've got a copy of the Charter here, so let me just start talking to it instead of wasting time here. So Section 4 is the Rules of Engagement. And it defines what full consensus means, what consensus means, what strong support but significant opposition means, what divergence means, sometimes called no consensus. It talks about minority views and so forth, and those of you that have been in the GNSO or in a GNSO PDP in the past are familiar with those kinds of things. Now, it recommends that the following method for discovering consensus and what level of consensus we would designate in the working group. So the first item there, and sorry to read without you being able to see it, but I don't want to just take up too much time here. So the first step is, after the group has discussed an issue long enough for all issues to have been raised, understood, and discussed, the chair or co-chair or co-chairs make an evaluation of the designation and publish it to the group for review. The second step, and everybody has scrolling capability now, so use that. So I'm down to what's shown at the bottom of the screen. Right there is where I'm at right now. I just did item I, lowercase Roman numeral I, and then 2 says, after the group has discussed the chair's estimation, the chair or co-chair should reevaluate and publish an updated evaluation. Step 3, steps 1 and 2 should continue until there's an evaluation that's accepted by the group, and then in a rare case, the chair may decide that the use of polls is reasonable, and they give reasons for using polls, and the same things I said earlier with regard to voting apply here. Now, and there's some cautions about using polls in there. Notice the paragraph at the bottom of the screen right now where it says consensus calls should always involve the entire working group. Please note that. And there are procedures about that, how to go about if somebody objects to a decision that was made and so forth, and we're not going to read all that. You may want to read it if you're not familiar with it. Going to step 3 then, scrolling down a little bit. I guess I should do that, huh? I'm looking at my screen, thinking everybody's looking at the same screen, and that's not the case. So step 3, there is just an appeal step and so forth. And then there are a couple notes that are important. Now, any question, well, it's probably not very fruitful to even ask for questions on the charter right now. Let's go back to the document that is up previously. I want everybody to just be familiar with this. You can look at the charter directly yourself. But let's go back to a document that the leadership team wants to make some suggestions here. And we'd like in our next half hour to see how far we can get in terms of an agreement, in terms of an approach. So follow with me as we go through this. So we did a very quick review of the charter, section 4. Our suggestion as leadership team is that we plan on producing at least 2 initial reports for phase 1. Now, for those of that aren't familiar with the GNSO PDP procedures, normally there's 1 initial report at the end. Just in phase 1, we think it'd be helpful to do 2 initial reports. And after initial report is published, there's a public comment period. And then the working group finalizes, produces a final report. So what we're suggesting, as you can see in 1AI there, after initial deliberation on the first 5 charter questions, that's work plan steps 12A, 12B, and 12C, the general requirements, work plan 12D, and the fundamental questions, which was in that presentation that we had some discussion on, that's step 12E, then that would be the first initial report is what we're suggesting. So after we've deliberated on all the possible requirements for the first 5 questions and the fundamental question and the general requirements, we would produce an initial report, and this will entail some changes to the work plan, adding a step 12F, and I thought this morning early that probably another one too we'll have to do, not only have that add a public comment period in there as well. And then a second initial report when we finish all of phase 1. And So let me pause there, just at that. Now, don't worry about how we're going to reach consensus yet. Let's make sure we're on the same page with regard to step 1A. Are there any objections to going with two initial reports? That would mean two public comment periods in phase one. And then in each case, we'd come back with a report after the initial report. Any objections or questions about that? That will be somewhat variation in terms of the fact that there's usually only one initial report, but I think it's going to be really important that there be public comment at least twice. And of course, there will always be opportunities. We'll have people can give input through those of you who are representing groups throughout. Okay, going then to step 1B. We're suggesting as leaders that we forego formally determining consensus on individual possible requirements using that charter method that we reviewed until after public comment is received and analyzed on the first initial report. So in the interim, we would try to, and I'm on BI there, in the interim, we'd try to reach rough consensus on possible requirements and communicate that in the first initial report. In cases where that is not possible, we describe the level of agreement and or disagreement in the first initial report sufficiently enough to allow for public input to help guide the consensus process. And then some ways that description could happen are given. We could say this requirement was supported by all, it was supported by most, it was supported by many, but also objected to by many, things like that. Though those aren't in concrete, but you get the idea, I hope. And then C, analyze and respond to public comments using the public comment tool and any other methods we want to use, but the public comment tool is one that's been used in the GNSO. And then D, taking into consideration the public comment, then we would formally determine consensus on the possible requirements for the first five questions contained in Charter Section 4. Okay, I went over that fairly quickly, but I think thoroughly too. Does that make sense? Does it not make sense? Are there questions about that? Is this an approach that the working group can support? Would you modify it in any way? I threw a whole bunch of questions in there. And Aiden, don't worry about those. Were just examples supported by most. We can decide when we get to that point what we want to say. But thanks for asking that. Kathy, go ahead.
Great. Thanks, Chuck. Kathy Kleiman. Yeah, I think we may be asking too much. I would recommend we focus on the big three. User purposes, privacy, data elements, because I can't even imagine asking people to talk about gated access before they know what elements are in there, because gated access is all about what you're trying to guard, and until you know what you're trying to guard, you don't know who you want to let in, you don't know under what circumstances. So I think we're asking impossible questions, and I would, as we have focused, I would have us urge the public to focus, because otherwise I think we're giving them too much to do. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Great input. And I'm gonna probe a little bit further, so hang in there with me, please. And then feel free to just respond when I ask you questions. This is Chuck speaking. Okay. So now the work plan already has us doing 1, 2, 3 before we do 4 and 5. Okay. But are you suggesting that we do an initial report after the first three and get public comment on that before going to 4 and 5, keeping in mind that the work plan already has us doing the first three before doing the fourth and fifth one? So let me let you respond.
Okay. Chuck, is that I assume that's a question to me and everyone.
It is.
Okay, great. Could you remind us what the fourth and fifth elements are, just because we don't have it in front of us?
That's the gated access and accuracy.
And accuracy. I would. I would have us go forward with a public comment so that we can have on the first three, so that we can gather around what is, who are our users, for what purposes do we want this data, what are the privacy frameworks and laws we believe are involved here for the registries, registrars, and ICANN, and then what are the data elements that we're converging on? Yeah, I think four and five, I think accuracy and gated access rely on the information, the input from those three. So, yeah, I guess I am recommending that we start with the big three, because otherwise it's just too many variables, too many possibilities.
Yeah, and I have no opposition at all to what you're suggesting. I'm just going to try to get us to nail it down in terms of specifics. So if the working group, and I'm going to ask for comments, pro and con, in just a minute. But so this, to me, would mean then we would have at least three initial reports and comment periods in phase one. Okay? We could change that later. Keep in mind, this, our work plan is live, okay? It's dynamic, okay? So we could easily change this to do that. So there would be, we cover the first three in that kind of rough consensus thing. We would do an initial report, number one, and public comment period, and then we would do a final report on those first three, and then we would, after that, do questions four and five, and then at that point, after another initial report. So it would involve three initial reports, three public comment periods. I don't think that's unreasonable considering how much work we're going to put into all of this in the coming months. So let me ask those of you who are in Adobe, if you could just check the green check mark if you agree with that approach. Okay, we've got several that clearly agree. Is there anyone, and I'll pause a minute because give people a chance, okay? So, and I'm not counting, okay? I'm just looking for a sense of the room. This is not a vote, okay? you can clear your agrees, okay? If everybody do that, please. Now, if you disagree, or maybe if you really disagree with the approach, I'm going to give some other options in a minute. So I know it's not clear cut, agree and disagree. But if you just totally disagree with this approach, would you put up a disagree mark in Adobe? And those of you that aren't in Adobe, if you want to just speak out your agreement or disagreement, feel free. But just do the red X if you disagree. Let's see if we have anybody that disagrees with the direction that Kathy is suggesting. Okay? I'm not seeing anybody that totally disagrees. And pausing a little bit, I see a hand went up there. Lisa, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. And this is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. I'd just like to call the group's attention to the original request for the PDP from the board, which did ask the group to look at both accuracy and access as part of the this PDP. So, of course, you know, we have to get to it, whether we get to it in the first round or not. But one of the things I wanted to point out is that the process framework actually put gated access in between identifying users and purposes and looking at data elements, precisely because it was felt it was important to decide whether all data would remain public before trying to go any further down the data elements line. So that was the importance of having at least the high-level recommendation on access be made as part of the early parts of the
discussion. And this group might feel that it's not necessary to answer that question before they get to data elements, but I just wanted to share what the process framework thinking was on that.
Thank you, Lisa. This is Chuck again. Does that sway anyone's view on this? And let me ask you a question, Lisa, because you were involved in all of this and all the history with it, or most of the history with it, at least with regard to leading up to this working group. Do you think the way that we're looking at it right now would really prevent us from considering the data accuracy and so forth, even while we're considering the first three? It seems to me we could still consider those issues without formally doing it like we would after the first initial report. What's your thinking on that?
One is that the process framework suggested that all of the questions be considered at once as opposed to trying to take them piecemeal, was that everyone has a different way of looking at this problem. And some people feel that they can't answer, you know, certain questions unless they look at other questions as well and sort of make a judgment based on the whole package. You know, how are we leaning on privacy? How are we leaning on data elements? How are we leaning on users and purposes? And also, you know, how are we leaning on whether everything is still public? To answer your question, Chuck, I don't think it prevents the group from doing that if you limit your first report to just the three questions that were suggested. But I do think that it will be important for some people to feel that they have answers to a feel of how the group is leaning on the other questions before they can, really weigh in on those three.
Okay, thanks. What we will do on this, unless there are objections to this approach, is after this meeting, and we're going to go through the rest of this document that's on the screen, after this meeting, we'll send out a revised version of this and ask for feedback on that. And our goal will be next week in our working group call to try and finalize this approach. And every time I use the word finalize, I kind of cringe myself because nothing's going to be in concrete until we finish all our work. So when I say finalize, at this stage of the process. Let's go on then, because we've only got about 15 more minutes. I want to get through all of this and get some initial feedback. And then keeping in mind that we're going to want to try and finalize, this will be, we're going to try and finish step 11 at this stage of the game in our working group call next week, if that's possible. And that's what this whole document's about. So let's look at item 2 then on this document. Thanks for all the feedback on item 1. Here is what this document suggests. That we take the following steps to refine the possible requirements list for all 11 charter questions. Now, our thinking is this. We've got a 110-page document or something of possible requirements. And I'm sorry, I got it on the wrong screen on the chat, so I haven't been watching that. But we think it'd be really helpful, and Greg Aaron, in fact, made some good suggestions. So what we suggest before we actually get into deliberating on individual requirements is that we triage the list of possible requirements and to ensure that they are in the correct phase and modify the list accordingly so that applicable, and then in cases where we think things that are now as listed as possible requirements that really are elements of phase 2 policy or phase 3 implementation, that we put placeholders for those in those other phases. Now, this is what Greg Aaron commented on a few weeks ago and suggested. And so the And so we would, first of all, refine the list so that we move those that are really phase two and phase three items into placeholders for future work, okay, in the other phases. Now, there's several ways we could do that. As you can see in item 2A2 there, we could have staff and or the leadership team take a first crack at that and then get review and approval and input by the working group. What we need to decide is, is that okay? I think if we were to try to do that in working group meetings, it would take us several weeks just to get through it. And I'm not sure that's the best use of our time. I think the best use of our time in the future is going to be deliberating. But is there anybody bothered by the fact of having staff, for example, take a first cut at that and then present it to the full working group to refine and modify? Anybody object to that approach? Is there anybody that objects to doing the triage of the list as proposed by Greg? Okay. All right. Let's go to step B then. And the next step would be then to identify similarities and interdependencies of possible requirements and group them according to their similarities and order them so that any prerequisite steps are covered before dependent ones. Now, this is a pretty big step. That's not going to be an easy task. But this will help us order, group them, first of all, by similarities, and then within groups prioritize them and prioritize groups as well. Now, we could, again, have staff and or the leadership team take a first crack at that and grouping them and so forth. Or we could try and do that as a full working group. Is there a preference in that regard? Do you want staff to take a first crack at it? And then that will speed us along and help us have the discussion together. And let me look. Okay, confusing because I... I need to catch up on the chat, sorry. I'm trying to do that. Go ahead, Lisa. Go ahead and talk while I catch up on the chat.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record, and maybe this will help with catching up in the chat. I think there might be a little confusion about the process that's being suggested here. So, first of all, I think both of the items that Chuck is talking about would occur before the group moves on to deliberation, which, of course, deliberation must happen before the first initial report. And the two things are triaging to figure out whether possible requirements fall into phases 1, 2, and 3 and what their interdependencies might be. And then the other thing is grouping similar requirements together. Now, note that I say similar. There actually aren't very many duplicates, true duplicates, on the list. There are a number of requirements that are tightly related and probably should be grouped together. I would hesitate to, at this very early stage, try to condense requirements that look similar that might have some, you know, small differences that are important nuances. So what's being suggested here is that we do that grouping so that the working group could look at everything that's, maybe in a more organized fashion, and then also divide things into phase 1, 2, and 3. Now, the document that Chuck has up suggests doing the triage of phases 1, 2, and 3 first, only because that gives us fewer things to group, to be honest. But both of those things, I think, will be helpful to help this working group then focus in on what probably falls in phase 1 and then be able to see the possible requirements that are at least similar to each other or tightly related through dependencies. That wouldn't remove anything from the list. It would just organize it.
And thanks, Lisa. I think you're using the word phase in a different sense than the phases 1, 2, 3 of our of the working group. Am I correct on that?
No, I actually am using the word phase, and unless I mistakenly used it someplace else. Phases 1, 2, and 3 are part of the triage approach.
Okay. All right. That's okay there. All right. So Chuck speaking again. Steve, hopefully that answers your question. So what's being proposed here is that before we start deliberation on any of the requirements, we do the triage so that we simplify our list. It should narrow it down some. And then we're suggesting that we try and look for similarities and dependencies, again, before we start deliberation. And in other words, what we're suggesting is refine the list, and there's a couple steps leading to that, the triage and then the getting similarities and then ordering like that. And then we start our deliberation. Now, it's going to take a little while to do that, not as long as the deliberation, but not even close. But that's what's being suggested here. So the triage and the grouping and prioritization would happen before we start deliberating on the first five requirements. So it would be before the first initial report. The first initial report wouldn't be published until we've deliberated on the first five, the first three questions, if we follow Kathy's suggestion. Okay? Steve, let me know if that didn't answer your question or if anybody else is unclear on what's being suggested. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Okay. I'm just waiting for the typing there. Okay. All right. I hope that answered the question. Let's quickly go to step three because I at least want to get through the document. This is going to be a tough one. Decide where to start deliberation. In our leadership call yesterday, we talked about a couple ways. You know, we had some pretty intense disagreement in terms of what we need to start with, and there's even been a comment or two in the chat today to talk about what we need to do first. So once we get to deliberation, we've done the triage, we've grouped them, we've ordered them, and show the by dependencies and so forth, we're ready to start work on the first, let's assume Kathy's approach, and we start deliberating on the first three areas. Where do we start? Well, one way to, we've talked about doing that iteratively, not just starting with privacy or not necessarily starting with purpose or not necessarily starting any particular one, but going back and forth as we need to. Step three then, and the way the work plan is designed right now, is purpose, privacy, and data elements are kind of grouped together in our deliberation. At some point, we need to decide what requirement are we going to start deliberating on. So using the results of step two above, you can see this on 3AI, we could randomly order the three questions, purpose, privacy, data elements, and start with whichever one comes back, and we could rotate that order each time we go to a new question. That's kind of just a random way of approaching it. Item two there then suggests a different approach because some of the discussion, at least from my viewpoint, has kind of indicated that this whole idea of purpose may, or at least may be pretty fundamental, and maybe we should start there or at least in part of the purpose questions before we start going back and forth between privacy and data elements. And another approach, a third approach, would be to approach all three areas by using use cases and dealing with it that way instead of focusing first on the requirements themselves. So let me be quiet now and entertain discussion. We just have a little bit of time, but let's get some quick comments from people, and we'll have more time to discuss this on the list in our meeting next week. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, Chuck. Kathy Kleiman, and I think in some ways we have to start with privacy. Even if we just touch on it and come back, there are definitions of purpose that come out of privacy laws. And so if you just, you know, throw out the term purpose, it means one thing. If you look at it as a term of law, or some people have called it a term of art, it means something else. And so I think we'll want to have all of that on the board as we're looking at purposes, because then users are also defined under privacy law. But purpose is the key one that I think we need to extract some definitions so that we can look at the range of purposes, because some of them, indeed, are bound by law and requirements. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Greg.
Thanks. Greg Chatton, for the record. I think, as I see it, you know, we're looking, you know, not at legal questions, at least not first, but we're looking at factual questions. Then we can, once we establish the facts, we can apply the law to the facts, which is kind of what typically happens. I think trying to, you know, determine it as a legal question first is not the way to focus on it. You know, we can talk about users and purposes, and then, you know, if some of those purposes or users trigger various, you know, legal issues, that's part of kind of a synthesis and second level of analysis. So I think it's premature to refer to legal requirements regarding users and purposes before we determine, you know, what users and what purposes we're talking about as a universe or a pair of universes. So let's kind of take it one step at a time. Thanks.
So, Greg, this is Chuck, if I understand you correctly, you're suggesting we should start with users and purposes? Is that what I heard?
I think in terms of starting with users and purposes, not, you know, try to look at them in tandem with legal requirements that may be triggered by certain users or certain purposes under certain privacy regimes under laws of certain jurisdictions. At that point, you're just kind of getting yourself all tied up in a knot. So I think wherever we start, my point is that when we look at users and purposes, we should, as we have been so far, continue to look at the potential universe of users and the potential universe of purposes, and then worry about what, once we have those lists, you know, where privacy requirements might be applied to those. But again, let's start by, this is a factual collection exercise first, and a factual analysis, and a number of the analysis, you know, one of the analysis points is privacy law, and there are a number of others, including a number of other legal points that are not privacy points.
So, a real quick question, Greg, what do you determine to be factual?
What I'm saying is that a fact, like that a potential user type is X, or that a potential requirement is Y. That's what I'm referring to. It's kind of, you know, a bit of, you know, lawyers talk about taking, first you look at the facts, you look at the law, you apply the law to the facts. That's kind of a, you know, simplistic way of looking at kind of a process of analysis. But looking at the law and the facts simultaneously gets you all jumbled up. So, you know, facts may not be quite the right thing, but I think in a sense it is factual, you know, what users there are and what requirements and purposes they may have. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Greg. We're out of time, but Kathy, let me give you just a real brief moment, and then we'll talk about next steps.
Since we are out of time and we've been on for 90 minutes, I'd be happy to continue and make my comments in the next call.
Okay, or online, even better, so that leading up to the next call, we've had some good discussion on this. And that's what
okay.
I'm going to suggest.
But let me just say in one sentence that PII, personally identifiable information, normally I would agree with Greg completely, but personally identifiable information is a completely different story. And so the law is absolutely critical in the analysis, and again, for drawing the definitions of purpose. So I'll do the rest online. Thanks.
Okay. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to revise this this document. There won't be much change in number three because we didn't get to discuss that thoroughly. But if there are no objections, we'll modify the steps one and two to correspond, especially step one, I guess, to correspond to the suggestion by Kathy and get continuing discussion on that. Please communicate your thoughts on this third item on the list in the coming days so that when we get into our meeting next week, we can hopefully start finding a way to get started in our deliberation once we're ready for that. Any questions? Anything else we need to cover? I think I already mentioned our meeting next week is at the alternate time. And of course, messages will go out on that. And Holly, you can cheer again, and anybody else that's has these terrible times most of the time. Okay. Anything I missed? Okay. That said, thanks everybody. We actually accomplished quite a bit, I think, and getting closer to next steps leading up to deliberation. So have a good rest of the week. Again, try to participate in the discussion on this approach between now and then so that we have some good debate online that'll hopefully make it easier for us to zero in next week. And for Greg and Kathy, in terms of the specific suggestions, the starting points that you made, if you can put that in some text that on the list that hopefully people can respond to easily, that would be great. Thank you very much, and we'll talk with you on the 22nd for most people. Some of us it'll still be the 21st. That will be the case for me late night. And so we will talk again then and on the list in the meantime. So we can adjourn the meeting now and end the call.
Thank you.